In early May of 1984, continuing with the Sheehan affidavit, I was supplied by source number 4 with a number of documents describing, in some detail, a project supervised by then Special Assistant California State Attorney General Edwin Meese, codenamed, quote, Project Cable Splicer. This project, undertaken by Edwin Meese under the direction of then-California Governor Ronald Reagan, took then-California Organized Crime Training Institute Commandant Louis O. Gifreda from his post in San Luis Obispo and made him the commanding general of the California State National Guard. At the California Organized Crime Training Institute, Commandant Louis Gifreda had been the instructor in civil disorder control. As commanding general of the California State National Guard, Louis Gifreda coordinated Project Cable Splicer for Special Assistant Attorney General Edwin Meese and Governor Ronald Reagan. Project Cable Splicer was a special, quote, War Games readiness exercise pursuant to which Governor Reagan, Special Assistant Attorney Ed Meese, and California State National Guard Commander Gifreda could together establish an effective statewide martial law, quote, in the event that forces of radical black nationalism joined forces inside the state of California with the anti-Vietnam forces to challenge the established authority of the state, unquote. Project Cable Splicer was part of a larger program codenamed Project Garden Plot, which was a nationwide war game scenario prepared by then-President Richard M. Nixon and his Attorney General John Mitchell, designed to establish a nationwide state of martial law if Richard Nixon's, quote, political enemies required him to declare a state of national emergency. In mid-May of 1984, I was informed by source number 10, who was a professional journalist in New Orleans, Louisiana, that he had learned that the state legislatures of Louisiana, Alabama, and Texas had sometime around April of 84 or May of 84 each passed legislation establishing units known as, quote, state defense forces. Source number 10 informed me that he was extremely concerned about this because the only people in Louisiana, Alabama, or Texas who seemed to have heard of the passage of these statutes, and who were, therefore, signing up to join these state defense forces, were ultra-right-wing paramilitary, quote, survivalist types, or, quote, soldiers of fortune types, who were being advised to sign up for these state defense force units at weekend survivalist training centers or ultra-right war game schools, unquote. Source number 10 informed me that this concern on his part had caused him to undertake an investigation to ascertain what was going on regarding the state defense force units in Alabama, Louisiana, and Texas. Source 10 informed me that he had discovered a group of men in Texas who had all signed up for the Texas units who had been expelled by the Texas National Guard for being too radically right-wing. This investigation led him to a Louisiana State National Guard colonel, Source 11. Source 10 informed me that this guard colonel had informed Source number 10 that the State Defense Force unit in Louisiana was, in the near future, this being in May of 84, going to be receiving a large quantity of small arms and ammunition, quote, in some kind of war game activity, unquote, supervised by the federal government. But that the State Defense Force in Louisiana, quote, was only going to have to give back half of the arms and ammunition received in the war games. The half which were left with them were going to be smuggled out of the country to the Contras in Central America, unquote.
Again, the significance of the Rex 84 plan is severalfold. Obviously, any plan to declare martial law in the United States in and of itself is worth taking note of. One of the most ominous features of the FEMA plan was the deputization of right-wing Klan and Nazi types to serve as official emissaries of the United States government. Now, certainly in a country with the legacy of the Galen Organization, in and of itself, that shouldn't appear all that far off the beaten track. Yet the notion of Ku Klux Klansmen and American Nazis operating in an official capacity, I think, has got to prove pretty unnerving to any intelligent and decent observer of the situation. In our Aryan Nations Radio Free America series and in our series on the World Anti-Communist League, we took a look at the Reagan administration in general and Colonel North's Contra supply effort as representing the ultimate development of what we called Freikorps methodology. We looked at the Reagan administration as the ultimate exponent of Freikorps methodology, the Freikorps being the underground units of the German military who systematically assassinated and eliminated the democratic leadership, in Weimar Germany, paving the way for Hitler's rise to power. We took a look again at Oliver North, the Aryan Nations, World Anti-Communist League in this regard, and conceptualized them basically as exactly that, an underground extension of the military. I think our thesis has borne out very nicely in some of the events that have come out, and again, the plan that we discussed at the end of Radio Free America number 30 to blow up the U.S. Embassy to Costa Rica, kill the U.S. Ambassador, Louis Tams, blame that on the Sandinistas, use that as an excuse to invade Nicaragua. Well, if there were widespread domestic protests to that war, this would have resulted in the implementation of Rex 84. And again, the notion of a deputization of the ultra-right in this country, the Klan and Nazi types, is something that should give all of us a rather large chill, send a rather large chill coursing down our spine. The implications of the Rex 84 plan were summed up very nicely by Alexander Coburn, spelled C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N. He's a nationally syndicated columnist who writes for, among other publications, In These Times. And this is from his column called Ashes and Diamonds in These Times issue of July 22nd, 1987. Research credit for this also goes to Mae Brussel. This is an article called a column by Coburn called Homegrown Fascist. Oliver North is a true memento of the Reagan era and indeed of the president himself. He has Reagan's own capacity for the vibrant lie, uttered with such conviction that it is evident that formidable psychic mechanisms of self-validation have, in that instant, convinced the liar, Reagan North, that what he is saying is true. But on display last week in Congress was something more disturbing than a mere deceiver. The cocksure, edgy, ingratiating profile of an all-American, 80s-style fascist. The fascist has absolute moral assurance that his lawlessness is lawful, that though he gets things done, unquote, he is following orders, that all impediments in his path, legal or moral, are obstructions erected by hostile conspiracy. Colonial wars are notable forcing beds for the development of the fascist personality, particularly if such wars end in defeat for the colonial or imperial power. France's defeats in Indochina and Algeria enrich the already muscular tradition of Gallic fascism, and, in a different idiom, the U.S. defeat in Vietnam produced a crop of officers brooding on the stab in the back, unquote, by effete civilians at home. It is entirely characteristic that North should have been part of a team drafting a secret plan to run the country by martial law. This phase of his activities occurred between 1982 and 1984, according to stories, particularly in Knight Ridder's papers, based on material developed by the Iran-Contra Committee staff. North's first assignment at the National Security Council in 1981 had been to carry the football, unquote, the briefcase carrying the plans for fighting a nuclear war that accompanies the president wherever he goes. Those who like thinking the unthinkable might ponder this parable of impending nuclear disaster. A president who has frequently expressed the view that the apocalypse, unquote, may occur in our lifetime, trailed by the football-carrying North with his own history of mental instability. In the following 2 years, North was the NSC's liaison with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, revising contingency plans to deal with nuclear war, insurrection, or major military mobilization. North and the FEMA folk settled down happily to develop scenarios of total control. FEMA's director at the time, John Giuffrida, had attended Army War College in Pennsylvania in 1970 and written there a paper advocating martial law in case of a national uprising by black militants, along with roundup and transfer, quote, to assembly centers or relocation camps, unquote, of at least 21 million American Negroes. This paper was reworked in a 1982 memo written by Giuffrida's deputy, John Brinkerhoff, at which time North and the FEMA team developed their plan for a secret contingency order turning control of the country over to FEMA at any time of nuclear war, violent dissent, or most significantly, national opposition to a military invasion abroad. FEMA would supervise appointment of military commanders to run state and local government. In other words, while North's colleagues at the National Security Council were preparing the invasion of Nicaragua, North was working on a scheme to introduce martial law in the U.S. as a means of crushing any internal opposition to that invasion when it took place. I think that's an eloquent summing up of the events in the scheme proposed in Rex 84. By the way, we took a look at this same team, Operation Cable Splicer and Operation Garden Plot, in Radio Free America number 23, when we dealt with Ronald Reagan's administration in California. Now, astute listeners may have noticed that there's something described in the Coburn column that was not described either in the Alfonso Chardi article from the San Jose Mercury, of July 5th, or in the Sheehan affidavit. The fact of the matter is that the original Alfonso Chardy article, the July 5th article which appeared in the Miami Herald, had a very key section which, for one reason or another, the editors of the San Jose Mercury left out. And that is the contingency plan to, in the event of an uprising by black militants, to intern 21 million black Americans in what amount to concentration camps. And the Miami Herald article from July 5th was obtained for us by Mae Brussel, and Nip's going to read you that section that the Mercury declined to print.
Yes, the excise section, Sunday, July 5th, Miami Herald, the article by Alfonso Chardy. The official said the contingency plan was written as part of an executive order or legislative package that Reagan would sign and hold within the NSC until a severe crisis arose. The martial law portions of the plan were outlined in a June 30, 1982 memo by Jafrida's Deputy for National Preparedness Programs, John Brinkerhoff. A copy of the memo was obtained by the Herald. The scenario outlined in the Brinkerhoff memo resembled somewhat a paper Jafrida had written in 1970 at the Army War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, in which he advocated martial law in case of a national uprising by black militants. The paper also advocated the roundup and transfer to, quote, assembly centers or relocation camps of at least 21 million, quote, American Negroes, unquote.
So, again, that is the part that the Mercury declined to print. It is obviously very, very similar to something which we have discussed in the past and that we've placed on file at Archives on Audio, namely the King Alfred Plan. In fact, our next Radio Free America show is going to begin with the King Alfred Plan, and we'll be discussing the King Alfred Plan. We'll come back to Rex 84 and in Radio Free America number 32 in 2 weeks.
As a matter of fact, yeah, it's very reminiscent of the King Alfred Plan, and the idea also of this being implemented by a bunch of Klan and Nazi paramilitary right-wingers being given guns and allowed to run around, with quasi-governmental status, is also very reminiscent of the book that achieved such cult success among these Aryan Nation type groups, The Day of the Rope, in which final atonement is made to by the enemies of the white race, quote unquote, and the idea of a bunch of paramilitary types being given weapons and told to go out and round up the blacks and Hispanics. It does have that kind of Day of the Rope sort of sound, as well as the King Alfred sound.
Yeah, we're going to begin in Radio Free America number 32, where we'll reprise the Rex 84 plan, and then we'll take a look at the massive and ongoing connections between the Reagan administration and many of the most notorious terrorist individuals and organizations on the scene today. This, again, to be evaluated against the background of Rex 84. And I would remind, although perhaps it's unnecessary, our listeners of the scenario that we've been developing. We stated it earlier. We've been developing over many, many years on these broadcasts, and that Mae Brussel has been developing many years before us, namely the deliberate manipulation of terrorism in order to establish a Reichstag scenario, to basically warrant the suspension or elimination of civil liberties at home, and to develop popular support and a favorable political climate for military expansionism abroad. This is why we focused so much on the Turple-Wilson team, why we focused on them long before the Iran-Contra scandal, and why we're emphasizing that focus in these broadcasts.
That's right, and as these articles by Alfonso Chardy and some of the earlier stuff we were talking about also quite well-covered things like the Louis Tams assassination plan and things of that nature, these are not pipe dreams, this is not conspiracy, this is not...
But it is conspiracy.
Well, yeah, it's not conspiracy in the common sense of things, common sense of the word conspiracy theory. This is these people are quite cold-bloodedly planning this stuff, and probably still are, although they may be a bit in abatement for a few months now.